Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here and have this time with you today. So much has gone on, and the world's changing so fast. We're doing this actually in, the end of August 2022. I usually don't go into dates because we do a lot with our shows and lots of things. The funny thing about life is a lot that we cover is still the same. And when you look at history, history repeats itself, and we all grow and grow as people, and that's the best part of life. And I know right now so many people are going through a lot of changes, and it's hard to keep our energy up, which we have to. We really have to individually focus and trust, and I trust God, and do our thing and not let all these other disruptions get the best of us. So today we are going to talk about, is it still a great time to buy a home? This is mainly for the U.S. We have people that listen in other areas, but we're basically talking about the United States today as far as buying in the 50 states, and we believe it is. Expert Chris Cassia is joining us today. He's a loan officer with Fairway Mortgage, which is a national mortgage company offering many loan products. He's going to discuss our changing times and today's loans, how to make it work and not let fear get in the way of your goals or the plans for your future. Because just like history repeats itself, this will work out, you know. And I think, in my opinion, it just seems like with so many things going on in so many directions, I've never seen a time where lots of things are falling through the cracks. And when it comes to buying a house and loans, I mean, that's a big investment. That's where you're going to live. I mean, there's a lot of people buying properties for just investments or commercial, and there's different issues. But when you're talking about the house you're going to live in, where it's your home, you don't want to pass that up. And without further ado, I want to welcome Chris Cassia. How are you, Chris? Thanks for coming on with your busy schedule.
I'm doing great today, Natalie. How are you?
I'm okay. I'm good. I'm going through. I'm making it. I only say that because my mom's been in the hospital for almost 3 months. So we have these seasons in life that we need to just address that and still keep everything going and keep our balance. But everything's good. You are such an expert in this industry, and you are so good at what you do. I know as a real estate broker that I can always trust you, and you really follow through. There's a lot going on in our industry. Since COVID, it was like a free-for-all for sellers, and things went up like crazy. And a lot of people got in the industry, even a lot of real estate agents got in thinking they'll make more money. And now we're going to come into a market. Things are changing, and they shift. We've been there before. It may not be, you know, what we've been used to, because we have a lot of other factors involved. But we have a lot of other factors involved. And let me see something here. So what do you – tell me, I just want to – so right now some people are sitting on the fence. The rates have gone up considerably since March. Then they came back down a little bit. I want to hear your take on what you think's going on and where you think we're going to go. And tell us before I want to – just more about you too, because you've been in the industry a long time, and you know this like the back of your hand.
Well, one of the things that everybody knows is the market is volatile. You know, everything that is happening in the world, happening with our politics, really has gotten to be sort of crazy. But when you are considering where you're going to live, the primary thing that matters most to you is what is it going to cost you to live where you want to live? And the one thing that you make a decision on is how much you're willing to pay for your housing. And one of the things I can say about purchasing a home instead of renting is that once you buy that home, if you're securing it with a fixed rate, you control that principal and interest. You control that payment, and it no longer will continue to increase on you other than the taxes and insurance that might be associated with it. When you rent, the length of your lease is the only control to the payment that you have. We have seen and have heard that rents today are increasing so much faster than the houses are appreciating.
Yes.
So if you are renting right now, looking to buy, if you wait another year, house prices, yes, they will appreciate. They'll appreciate maybe 4%, I think, is a projection over the next year. But rents have been going up 14% recently. So,
wow.
You know, who knows where you'll be if you're renting now and what you're going to be paying when you could have fixed that payment with a purchase.
That's a really good point. You know, I talked to somebody in Vegas last week who said that they their rent 2 years ago was $500 less than it is now. And they're going to move to another place because they said there's more amenities. That's a big increase in 2 years on a place. You said it was like $1,200, just a small apartment, and then they went up to $1,700. That's a lot. And you are, you know, when you rent, though, you're also at the mercy of if the seller decides to sell, depending on how your lease is written. It's not yours. You can't, like, and Chris, you mentioned you have control of that payment. And so in that situation, say somebody does a 30-year mortgage, they can pay on they can pay towards the principal and knock off a lot of interest, right? Do you suggest usually a 15 or 30-year? Like, there's so many ways to work it.
Again, that's a question for your financial planner, in my opinion, because
right.
My approach is if you're looking to minimize your payment, which most people are, instead of accelerating
right.
The addition of equity in the property, the bottom line is unless you're 62 or older looking for a reverse mortgage and eliminating a payment completely, all you're doing
right.
is sinking monies into your equity that you might be able to get to perform a whole lot higher return on investment by putting it into an investment portfolio with your financial planner. So I would say that you want to discuss those things with your financial planner. And if you don't have one, I would suggest that you get one.
Makes sense. Makes a lot of sense. Well, now, historically, when people are, you know, a lot younger, I think the older generations remember back in the 80s, the, you know, 14% interest rate. I know towards the end of 85, 86, they started to come down. And in the 90s, when we had anything under 10%, it was great. I remember buying properties at 9.5% and was fine doing it. You know, of course you qualify for less, but, and then it averaged around 8.5%. We didn't get down to sixes until like 2000. You know, of course prices were different and, you know, monies were different, but we'd been through this before and there were so many different ways to do it. Do you, you know, I know in the loan industry, though, like you offer, Fairway offers many different loan packages. So it's safe to say that one shouldn't assume, well, I can only get this or can only get that, right? It's really important to check around and talk with somebody like you who's very knowledgeable about different products, different loans they can get to get, you know, to work best for what they qualify for versus, which is the best way to go, right? I know nowadays it's so different because they're changing so many rules as far as first homes, second homes. What do you do in that respect? somebody comes to you and they know they want to buy this house, or do you just go over a range of questions with them to be able to figure out which is the best product to offer them? How do you do that in this changing market?
Well, the first thing is to do a thorough question and answer with the borrowers or the buyers to find out what their long-term and short-term goals and objectives are. Obviously, if they are just planning to keep the house for a few years instead of renting and then selling or moving on to another location or to a bigger house because this one is just going to be a stepping stone, then one of the things they might want to consider is a lender that has a myriad of products and options to offer to try to accommodate those goals and objectives. You know, there's 100% financing programs. There's, you know, government-funded or insured programs like FHA and VA and USDA that can provide higher allowances for seller contributions towards your closing costs to minimize the amount that you have to come up with. But there's also other products with certain investors that are willing to take greater risk with lower credit scores, people that have had troubles. There's even products now for investment properties that will just look at the debt service on the property in question and disregard any other debt ratios that might prevent you from qualifying. So I try
Really?
Yes. And I
is
try
that
to do
mostly on commercial or just rent?
I only deal in residential financing, so
okay.
I don't know what the commercial side has to offer.
Right. No, that's fantastic. But, so on the residential side, then when you say investment property, say it's a four apartment unit, I guess they could go FHA on up to a four apartment unit, or the rules used to allow. Things have changed so much. I've been in 37 years, and I just have to always ask because things have changed so much that you can't depend on what the old rules are. And I really respect how you work because I know you keep up on everything. You don't leave a stone unturned, and that's really important. There's a lot of situations out there where things aren't done and followed through on. And we as brokers and agents, we're in a situation now that years ago, for example, in the 90s, we got a financial information sheet from the buyer, which showed us if we were representing the seller and we're going to review an offer, it showed us what they made, how much money they had in the bank. We could actually do the qualifications ourselves. Now, you know, for the ratios, we knew, you know, if there's a risk here, risk there, because of privacy laws, which do make sense, we don't get all that information anymore, and it makes it difficult to do our job, and it's so important to know that the loan officer you're working with is really on it, like you are on it. And we've even gotten to the point where we're going to have buyers sign that they're going to allow us to talk to the loan officer, because there's many situations where the loan officers go, we can't talk to the listing agent, we can only talk to the buyer's agent. And it makes it impossible because you certainly don't want a situation where everybody's waiting a while thinking the person's going to qualify and make it, and then the deal doesn't go through, right? Because sellers, you know, have to are in a different position as well. So I think you do a great job with that. I think for buyers sometimes it can be overwhelming because we have so many choices these days, but maybe we don't. Maybe some of those choices are in the marketing and advertising, so we really have to make sure we're going to somebody we trust, like you. Are you able to offer like no doc loan products? Is that what a little bit like what you're when you're saying they can buy an investment property and go off the value or the what's going? Is that what you mean, or is that completely different?
There is really no no doc product out there per se today. There are bank statement products. As I said, there are the debt service products against the specific property if it is an investment property. But the government laws now have passed rules that in order to appropriately collateralize the property, and not lose the entire investment in it by the lender. They need to prove they have gone through an ability to qualify or ability to repay analysis. And so whatever means they use to do that, it has to be documented in the file for posterity's sake. If there was ever a default and they were seeking to reclaim the property through foreclosure, they would then have to show that they duly qualified that borrower at the time of purchase to be able to repay that loan under whatever means that they had established as a regular means to determine that. It might be the asset accounts that they had available that they documented, and
right.
dividing that by 360 payments would then be used as a monthly income to determine whether
okay.
they could qualify under their debt ratio guidelines. But
it's something
that
like that, they usually need at least 20%
no-doc loan.
Right, right. Do they need like 20% down on something like that usually, or it's not? It's just totally off of the
No, that's Freddie. That's Freddie and Fannie that will allow that.
Amazing.
If you have an asset that you have seasoned, you know, in some cases it needs to be to show that you've had those assets for at least 2 years, and you have no other income, you can use the asset depletion as a means of qualifying income.
When did that start?
But that's, again, it's been a while, but it's been something that was unused because when no-doc loans did exist, all people really looked at was your credit report, and if you had good credit, the basis was, okay, they have good credit. They know what they're doing with their finances. If they want to buy this house with a $5,000 a month payment, we'll give it to them.
Right.
That no longer is the case, because if you default on that, and you show that the lender never did qualify you with an ability to repay, then
right.
they can't foreclose on you.
Really? Wow. There's so much changing. So with the other one, with the Freddie and Fannie allow it, it's only been a few years probably, right? Or so, I mean, I don't know. You said it's been a while, but that's new
again,
to me, other
I don't
than
know
like
how many
asset
years
lending.
It's been.
Wow.
I just have employed it over the last 3 or 4 years, I guess, for the first
wow.
time in the 28 years I've been in the business.
Wow, that's amazing. So let me – okay, so because I'm – there's asset lending, and then that's – okay, so – in a scenario, somebody has a house, and they have $500,000 equity in their house, right? And they want to buy an investment property. Can you give us a step like how that works? And they don't have the other income to show you.
Again, if they are an experienced landlord, I give you an example of one of our investors. Right now, a new investor, so it's fresh on my mind. If they are an experienced landlord, they may be able to secure up to an 80% or 85% loan to value against that investment property, as long as the debt service ratio on that property is over 1.0. That means that the rents monthly divided by the housing payment monthly equals 1.0 or greater. If they're an inexperienced investor and have never had any landlord experience, then their limit would be a 70% loan to value. So they'd have to put down at least 30%.
So the other way, they put down 85%, but
15%.
On that property that 15%, I'm sorry, 15%. On the property that they're using as collateral, then you put a lien on that or what?
Just like any other purchase, it's secured by a lien, which is a mortgage or deed of trust that defines all of the default processes that would allow that lender to reclaim that property because it's been
collateralized. But they're using the one that they have, right? As collateral as well.
Again, that would be securing a lien against their existing properties. So they would have to, in
right.
that case, have income to qualify for whatever mortgage they put on that primary residence.
Okay. Okay. Interesting. Because that, if they were securing a lien there, they'd have to be, it would be a second, and that's not a good position for you guys
well,
to be
if they
in,
don't
right?
have a mortgage on it, that would be a first.
Gotcha.
You could take out a line of credit or a home equity loan or a standard refinance 30-year fixed rate mortgage
to
use that secured asset for the funds to purchase the investment property and use that for the down payment.
And I like, that's great.
So that would be two separate transactions. The first one being
right.
a proof of the ability to repay on the primary residence that you're borrowing against for the down payment on the investment property, which the ability to repay is proven and justified by that debt service ratio of the rent payments monthly divided by the monthly housing payment.
Okay, that makes sense. And if they're seasoned, it's like 1% on their, and then if they're not, it's going to be, they're going to, well, if they're seasoned, it's 85%, and it's not 70. That's great. Now, and in that particular product, are the rates higher usually, or it just depends?
Of course, because they're not.
Well, I'm saying, but I know our listeners may not know, so that's why I'm asking those kind of questions, yeah.
Yes, any offline product that an investor comes up with to create more business opportunity and more housing opportunity for consumers
mm-hmm.
Has greater risk because
got it.
Of that uncertainty of any statistical history having been developed on whether that product has what type of default rate that product might particularly have.
And then you said, though, Freddie and Fannie offer it, right?
Not that debt service ratio product, no.
Okay.
No, that's a non-prime product that specific investors will offer.
Okay. It's really good to know because there's so many scenarios that come up. And you guys can do it in 50 states, right, pretty much?
Yes. I'm licensed in 4 states, Maryland, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and Connecticut, but Fairway Independent Mortgage is licensed in all 50 states. And
I know
out of state.
You're great, though.
Areas,
Chris, you're awesome because I know we had somebody we referred in Florida. I don't know what they ended up having to do something different because of the divorce, but you were really good about making sure that person was placed properly in another state with someone that knew what they were doing, and then there's a certain portion you can look at. How do people contact you?
They can reach me on my direct line at 410-967-7290 or email me at Chris C, C-H-R-I-S-C, at fairwaymc.com. Or they can go to my website, which is www.cashafinancial.com, C-A-S-C-I-A, financial.com.
Cashafinancial.com. That's excellent. Yeah, so we were talking a little bit right before the show, and you brought up a great scenario, and we do Hawaii, Maryland, and then we have our pulse on other states with our membership. We've seen a huge change since March, since the rates started going up, but they went up and now they came down a little bit, right? We were up to like 6.25 and then it came down into the 5s. Is that right? I'm not looking at the rates single day.
With good credit scores, yes.
Okay, so for example, in Hawaii, when you look at the whole state and all the islands, 50% of buyers have cash, which really helps Hawaii a lot. But we've seen a major shift because prices are coming down. Buyers are a little bit more leery. They know they may get a better deal. You know, it's shifting. And so in Maryland, so we see different things. In Maryland, I'm seeing some really quiet times. And you had said that because of course people qualify for less. So if someone qualified for a $500,000 house, they may now qualify for $400,000, just as an estimate. And you mentioned that you're seeing a couple things differently the last couple of weeks. Can you elaborate about that a little bit?
Yeah, pre-qualified a number of people earlier this year, or even way back into the fall of last year, that were pre-qualified for a certain purchase price range based on the payments that they could either qualify for or they wanted to assume as a as an upper threshold on the limit. And they went looking and basically submitted offers on 3, 4, 5 houses and were never able to win a contract because of the other competing offers that were willing to put escalation clauses that were ridiculously higher than what they were willing to pay. You know, I have seen, and there may be some that are higher, but I've seen escalations of upwards of $75,000 above the list prices that were asked for. And that made it very, very difficult for somebody to that was new to the market, that it was their first time buying a home, to say, hey, I'm going to buy this home for $75,000 more than it's worth right now. But with the way prices have appreciated, those other investors knew that if they bought the house within a couple of years, they would reclaim that $75,000 in appreciated value. But recently, because of the increase in the rates, the inflation threats, the basic throwing up of the hands of all these people that were looking 6 to 12 months ago, saying, I don't think I'll ever win an offer. I'll just go get another 12-month lease on my apartment. Now there's less competition for the same house that you might be interested in. And I just recently, just this week, had two new offers that came in, one which was in Maryland that the list price was $190,000, and an offer went in for $170,000, and that was accepted.
They got less.
And so there's a ratified contract on that one. There's also one in Virginia just yesterday. The asking price was $729,000 in Northern Virginia. The offer was put in at $710,000 with $7,000 back towards closing help from the sellers, and they countered it and said, we won't do that, but we will accept $720,000 with $7,000 back. So in essence, the seller's going to net $713,000 when they listed the price at $729,000. So sellers now understand they don't have these big escalation clauses
now
to consider that they're going to get more than they're asking for. Maybe in some cases, yes, but those are two particular ones this week. People who were out of the market since February because they basically gave up and said, I can't compete with this and I'm not going to go to that escalation limit. And now they've got a house for less than it was listed for.
That's fantastic. Yeah, so I think
there's a better market today. Again, we have to consider what you as the buyer are willing to accept as a house payment. And that will then drive what price range you should be looking at. And there are houses out there available. There's actually more houses out there available on the market today than there were 6 months ago. And there's less competition to buy those houses because of the people that have given up. So if you don't give up.
And they're having to reduce.
They're having to reduce it.
That's amazing. Let me ask you, what do you think about, okay, so to you and I, because we've been in a long time, the rates are still good. People got really spoiled with 2 and 3% rates. That just was amazing. But then prices went up, you know, and like you said, the escalation clauses were all over the place. Appraisal clauses, because many of these places were not appraising, and people said, that's okay, I'll pay the difference if they had the cash. What do you think about buying the rate down? So say, for example, it's in the high fives, and somebody kind of wants to get in the fours or you know, buy it down, and in their negotiations, because there's a limit on what the seller can pay towards closing, right, based on how much they're putting down, what type of loan, et cetera. What do you think about buyers buying the rate down and putting that in their negotiation? Seller will pay $10,000 towards my rate reduction, or I guess it has to be closing costs. You would know the way it has to be worded. But what do you think about that idea, rather than giving up going, oh, I don't want these rates, even though I think, to me, the rates are good, but I'm talking about the, you know, people that aren't used to them.
Well, again, the government and all of its wisdom really restricted buyers several years ago from paying more points and fees than they prevented them from paying more points and fees than they wanted to get the rate down as low as they wanted to buy it down. That is not impacted if the seller does pay some of the closing costs and those seller concessions are applied against those discount points. You know, generally okay. There is a rule that a loan is considered a high-priced mortgage if there's more than a 3% total in points and fees.
Really?
And therefore,
but even if the buyer chooses to do it, and it's not, oh, go ahead.
Can't do it. It puts more restrictions on the loan and who's willing to accept those. A lot of lenders aren't going to migrate or vary, diverge from those requirements.
Is it
just to stay kosher with the government if there was any audits?
Got it. No,
because there's
unfortunately. Well, unfortunately, with the Dodd-Frank and all the stuff that happened, well, 2008 and then 11, 12, the Dodd-Frank and all that, it really, I feel like the mortgage companies got too much was put on them and too much liability and the fines and all these problems, you know, because it's just, I think it went too far in the wrong direction against mortgage companies. But so could they do up to three points and it's okay? Or is the three like the magic number? Or could they do 2 points and buy down? I mean,
there's other fees that are related to loan costs that are considered part of that threshold. So it's not just
okay. The
points. So it may be that anything above 2.4 points plus those other fees may then cause it to exceed that threshold, and therefore it then becomes a high-priced mortgage, which then, as I said, puts more restrictions and more requirements and less protections against the investor holding that note.
Let's play it out, like hypothetically, we're guesstimating on the numbers, not being totally exact, but say you know, I don't know, 5.75 is 0 points and 5.5 is 1 point. Like an extra point might help them through the life of the loan, right? If they're just saying, hey, I want to negotiate the best deal I can get here. It depends. I know under VA, the seller can pay 100% of the cost, but then it depends what the costs are, right? We offer buyer rebate programs up to what?
And up to 2 discount points.
Okay. So it may be something.
But again, that's considered anything above that 2 discount points and the other closing costs. And this is one of the great things about a VA loan offering. 100% financing, and the seller can pay all of your closing costs and an additional 4% in seller concessions. Now, those seller concessions will include any discount points in excess of 2 points. It'll include your prepaids to set up your escrow, and if there's anything left over, it could even include paying off some of your other debt.
That's amazing. So they can pay their closing costs plus 4%. So let me ask it, because, for example, I'm giving an example. Like, we offer buyer rebate programs. In Hawaii, the closing costs are a lot less than they are in Maryland. It's just the way it is, even though prices of houses are way higher. So let me say it's a $600,000 property, and we're willing to pay up to 2% on a buyer rebate, and so that would be 6 times 2 is $12,000. But their closing costs might only be $7,000 because the closing costs again are less than Hawaii. So that difference, we have to upfront get the price lowered or work it out, because we can't, we don't want them to lose that credit, right? Because it has to all be disclosed, et cetera. So are you saying, like, with that situation, they can also pay an additional 4%?
Again, they can do that on VA loans. On any other loan?
That's what I mean. No, I'm talking about VA.
Would not be available.
No, I'm talking about on VA.
Yes, if they had granted and acknowledged the willingness to contribute $12,000, There may be a addendum to the contract that then spells out that includes paying off, assisting the payoff of other debt to qualify. They can do that.
That is incredible, because historically with us, we had to work it out a different way as far as the maximum. So has that been around a long time, the 100% plus before?
Yes, as long as I've been in the business, okay. It has, yes.
Okay. That's amazing. So to me, it really is worth people asking about this and then you guys figuring out, yeah, this will work, this won't work, right? Rather than just assuming, I can only do it this one way. That's
I
great.
Will fully vet.
I like it.
My process when I speak to a client is, as I said, to get through a thorough question and answer to find out what their goals and objectives are in purchasing and owning the home, and then to make sure that I understand their limits and thresholds and concerns for the future and look to see what products will fit them. I will fully vet their income and assets to verify their ability to repay before issuing a pre-approval, because I think that in this market, there's still lenders that offer pre-approval letters without ever looking at somebody's credit, without ever looking at somebody's income or asset documentation, and they just give a piece of paper that's worth just as much as the paper that it's written on. And I have another realtor who also last week called me on two of his clients that decided not to use me because I asked them for all the documentation up front to fully vet them. They went with another one that said they don't need that documentation. And when they got nearer to closing and found out, one of which all this extra documentation was indeed needed to qualify, she was able to. But the other one, not able to qualify.
Yep.
Because
and you are so good at what you do.
Was not
and
accurate
just,
and wasn't vetted.
Right. Yeah.
So my question,
you're so good at what you do.
To any realtors listening to this out there is, when you put in an offer and you include a pre-approval letter, do you want that pre-approval letter to be a bona fide approval ultimately so that you can go to closing, or do you want to have egg on your face when that listing agent finds out that your client really was never pre-approved properly?
Right.
You lose the deal, and then you get shame in the marketplace for the type of clients that you bring to a contract.
Exactly.
Use
now
a lender
that is going to fully vet. You always look at You look at everything, and it's really difficult in our industry. You know, people sometimes they've already have a loan officer or the other agent, and they've already tipped one because we'll say, you know, let's talk to Chris. And we've had times where we have to come back, and I know one deal particularly you helped out in Hampstead, Westminster Hampstead area, that area. And a couple years ago, we had there was a program that was the scores, so the credit scoring when COVID hit and all these things were going on. You know, sometimes lenders are in positions where they're like, okay, we're not, or Freddie and Fannie, you know, there's a whole thing. We need a whole show to go over how all the lending really works, like on the back end and with the government and funding and guarantees, et cetera. But the scoring for somebody was higher than what it was in the transaction. The other agent, like, disappeared, you know, when you can't, you know, it's really funny. You'll communicate, communication's key. And then when nobody's returning your calls, you're like, there's a problem. And you jumped in and the other loan officer they had apparently disappeared too and couldn't figure it out. You jumped in and figured it out immediately to get the buyer to pay down on some cards or do some things. And we closed the deal and it wasn't that much longer. I mean, you're really good at what you do. And I think a part of it is you really are thorough up front looking at the end goal and saying and working backwards. So I imagine when you give the packages to the underwriter, when they get them, they're really clean with you. And it makes such a difference. I had another one in Harford County months ago, back in March, April. They had their own lender, had the lender's like, we can do it in 21 days. I said, that's just too tight. The place underappraised. It was so It didn't need to underprice. Appraiser underpriced at $30,000. We appealed it because we had good comps right there. It was like $550,000. We had really good comps, and we won. But the loan officers were like, they just didn't want to even do that. They didn't want to do the extra work, and we did it because I jumped in and got it done. You're so different, Chris. You just have it all covered. I'm really impressed. Now, with you, with the four states that you're in, what can you do with your licensing? Because what can you do, for example, say somebody's in California or Hawaii or whatever, and you do have Fairway, and you know who to refer it to because you've been there so long and you love Fairway. I know you do because you stuck with them a long time. Is it where you can refer them and then even talk to them to vet them, or the person you're going to refer them to asks all these questions? I'm just asking because there's never been a time, in my opinion, that the referral and being able to refer to someone you trust, and we do it with brokers and agents in other states, it's because it's too risky these days. It's for these people that do just say, you're fine, but you're not fine. So can you help with that, or is that you just have to refer and be hands-off?
Again, that's a delicate question that
I know. I know.
If I am not licensed in a state, I am not
right.
Allowed to quote any rates or pricing in that state.
Right.
Somebody is calling me for consideration in one of the states that I am in, I can take the information and help them determine their qualification criteria in one of the states I'm licensed in. And in general, that applies to other states, but ultimately, if I was going to be counseling them or advising them, it would have to be in a state that I was licensed.
Gotcha. I just wonder if it's worth those questions.
But I do refer things out to other colleagues, yes.
That you know are good. And I wonder
yes.
if there's a, in the network kind of thing, I wonder if there's a way the questions and answers are going to go over the same thing kind of thing, you know, with them. Because you're really good at what you do. And it's we can't throw mud at the wall and have it stick and, like, you know, just hope it sticks. So we have to be really detailed, and you are. I know we're going to have it okayed by an attorney, having the buyer sign that we're allowed to talk. And can you imagine, like, everybody's busy, the title companies, escrow companies. Well, I don't mean with the market chains, but, you know, over our business is everybody's busy because you're always doing something with it. When now there's such a silence, like, they, you know, for the listing agents being able to talk to the loan officer, right, is really not not good because, you know, even though you're hoping the other agent's working with you and going through it, but we need some better communication in that situation. So I'm going to pivot over to, I think it was last April. Yeah, I don't think it's been that long ago. Time's flying by to me, but they say that happens when you get older. And I think there was a change with second homes. What was that about? If you're going to buy a second home, they weren't allowing certain things. What was that happening, or did that stick?
Well, the change.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yes, but the change essentially was increasing the loan level price adjusters on second homes to get them closer to what those loan level price adjusters were on an investment home. And I believe that was done, in my opinion, because the government or the agencies were seeing that investors were gobbling up the available inventory to rent, offer for rent to people who also were trying to buy, and it was preventing them from being able to successfully win a contract because the investor bought the property and then that took another property off of the market as a potential sale.
So
there's large investors right now that are looking to gobble up all the available inventory that they can in certain communities and then become landlords for all of these properties as an income source. And what that's doing.
But a second home. I agree. Because, like, Amazon, I know Jeff Bezos just invested in one of the companies that's doing that. There's a few companies that are, one of them went public that you're right, buying up all the, and they're going to, you know, they're getting into the rental market. And But it doesn't sound fair that if they go, hey, I mean, I could see if they said this is your third, fourth, fifth home or it's corporations. I mean, it's smart to put your property in LLC when you're buying an investment property. But if it's just a second home, you want a house at the beach and you have a house in the country and it's just a second home, I don't know how that fits into their rationale.
Again, I know that it may seem to be unfair to people wanting to buy second homes in that
mm-hmm.
situation. But again, what these investors, some of them first-time investors, were doing was looking to buy a house that they could qualify as a second home and then rent it out to somebody instead of using
really
their own second home.
So they really weren't buying it as a second home. I mean, they're I know
right.
We have in documents a lot of different loans, or like an FHAV, it will say you're going to live in the house for at least a year, right? Or there's different things in place to protect everybody. Not that people always do it, but wow. It's kind of sad that they, you know, the innocent ones get hurt because of the other things going on. But we're in a world of capitalism, and I do want to stay in capitalism. So that makes sense. Gosh, yeah. Well, we're coming down to our last 10 minutes. God.
I was just going to say it's been a pleasure speaking with you and your audience here today. And just wanted to say that if there is anybody that has a question related to mortgage or financing, use me as a resource. I'd be happy to talk with you. You could always reach me at 410-967-7290 or through my website, www.cashafinancial.com.
Oh, it's always been a pleasure, Chris, and you're amazing. So thank you for coming on today, and we'll talk soon. Everybody out there, I wish you peace.